Welcome to The Smart Life, a podcast from Beacon Agency that explores the latest in smart home and Internet of Things technology. I'm your host, Sophie, and I'm the content director here at Beacon. Each week, I'm joined by some of the biggest thought leaders in smart tech, here to unpick the challenges and opportunities faced by the industry as we endeavour to make the world of smart tech just that little bit more human.
Welcome to The Smart Life, a podcast from Beacon Agency that explores the latest in smart home and IoT technology. Today, I'm joined by Caroline Lorenzen, Managing Director of TL Tech Smart Home Solutions. Like many big players in our ever-changing industry, Caroline has had an unusual path into the world of the Internet of Things. But there aren't many people who can claim the North Sea as a milestone on their journey to smart home innovation. A chemical engineer and project manager by background, Caroline runs TL Tech with her husband. They are united in their mission to find new ways for smart tech to empower people to maintain independence in their own homes and are passionate about breaking down barriers to help people access digital solutions. Caroline, welcome to The Smart Life.
Well, thank you, Sophie, and thank you so much for inviting me back again.
Oh, pleasure. I know I should say welcome back to The Smart Life as you appeared in one of our previous series. Is it fair to say you are not your typical tech person?
Yeah.
Tell me a little bit about your path into the smart home industry and this elusive factor I dropped in. How did the North Sea feature?
Yeah, so I think people are always fascinated when I explain my background as a chemical engineer. And so I've worked in the energy industry for the last 2 decades, pretty much. And I spent time offshore working on the installations offshore. I know a lot about pumps and compressors and process control, molecules, lots of very technical engineering-y type things. And Thomas, my other half, he is an electronic and electrical engineer, again, with a background in the oil and gas and offshore industry. And I think for us, our journey really began when the oil industry had a downturn. So there was a big crash in the oil price in 2015. Mm. Thomas was made redundant and at that time took some time off, I think, for his own mental health. He actually really, he needed that space, and his hobby and the thing that he loves more than anything in the world is gadgets, tinkering, and our business grew from there, to be honest.
So tell us a little bit more about your business. Tell us about TL Tech.
Yeah, so our smart home business, we specialise in helping people to maintain their independence in their own homes. So a lot of the work that we do is with individuals who are older or maybe have disabilities. Our biggest customer is actually a housing association. So we do all of their smart home tech support for a number of their research and innovation projects. And then we also have been helping with some of their new research into sensor technology and different algorithms. And it is all about supporting the residents and looking at the data in an intelligent way to help them get the best out of life and be supported as much as possible.
And am I right in thinking that in order to do that, you believe in finding innovative ways to use technology, often for sort of surprising uses that possibly weren't their original intention or the original audience they had in mind when they were creating things, and you're taking these consumer electronics and finding surprising uses to better people's well-being?
Yeah, that's right. So a lot of what we do to kind of keep the cost down is using off-the-shelf consumer electronics and then adapting them to work better and helping to integrate the different ecosystem providers into one central place, on one central repository with all the data, so it's able to create automations that are bespoke to that person in their situation. I guess the smart home world is getting a little bit better at doing that, you know, with things like Matter and some of these new ways, and the industry themselves is recognizing that they can't pigeonhole, you know, people into only buying Samsung or only buying Apple. They have to allow the consumer more choice. But yeah, certainly when we started in 2016, you know, that was a big part of what we were doing, was helping people to get, you know, their lighting and their heating and, you know, all of these things talking to each other.
It seems pretty clear that the operating model for TL Tech has always put well-being at its heart. Is that fair to say?
Yeah, so I guess it was a voyage of discovery in that when we joined this industry and, you know, we became CDO members and did all the training and things, I think what we saw is like there's kind of a really long continuum where there's people that have big budgets that can create really stunning homes. And then the people that can actually benefit from the technologies the most that have the smaller budgets and, you know, less digital literacy and understanding, they're not able to access these technologies. And we felt really drawn to helping people to really get the best out of these technologies and not feel afraid of them as well, and try and showcase, you know, some of the ways that they can support your well-being.
Yeah. Now, as we mentioned to begin with, you appeared on this podcast back in August 2020, where you talked a lot about your mission, this idea of tech for good and using it to help people's well-being. And you were at the time that you were talking to Thomas and Jess, we were in this funny world of in-between lockdowns where we weren't quite out of the woods as far as being so paralyzed by fear of the pandemic, but we certainly were, you know, we obviously didn't know a second lockdown was coming. But how much did the pandemic change things for TL Tech, especially around your mission to kind of make tech and connectivity universally available to people?
Yeah, 2020 was some year.
Wasn't it, Jeff?
I could take you through a bit of what happened that year, honestly. If someone had said like where we would be at the end of that year versus the start, I would have just thought they were crazy.
Really?
So, obviously, our business is very hardware focused, and all of what we do is very individual focused as well. So what we were doing before is going to people's houses, spending time to get to know them and their families, asking them about, you know, what are the things that they would really love to be able to do that maybe they're struggling with, and trying to find solutions that really give them that independence back and that kind of sense of autonomy and just, you know, being able to enjoy that space and feel safe in it. And similarly with the Housing Association, you know, we're fitting out the tech in the houses, and all of that stopped. We couldn't go to people's houses, one, because our customers were vulnerable, and then two, Thomas actually has a history of strokes. So with his health condition, we were just really nervous about, you know, how might the virus affect him with the medication that he's on and things. So all of that stopped overnight. But given how passionate we were about helping people, what we decided to do was we went live on Facebook every week teaching people how to use Alexa to video call their loved ones.
It's amazing.
So of all, this is kind of like my kind of key phrase, I say of all the tools in the smart home toolbox, the voice assistant is by far the most powerful. And with the customers that we had been working with, the majority of them, we, you know, when we speak to them about the things that they're concerned about, a lot of it's to do with, you know, needing that reassurance to be able to check in and that human connection. So the voice assistant, with the Alexa having the screen and the video capability, just made real perfect sense that, you know, we could help people to have the opportunity to stay in touch and in a way that's quite easy and accessible, because the Alexas have the new drop-in capability, so you could do a video call and the person at the other end doesn't even need to answer, it will just automatically connect.
Yeah.
For someone who's maybe new to that technology, it's really easy to get started. So we did that, and then we started to look at all the other things that Alexa can do. And so the Facebook features went on for weeks, and we showcased all the different things, you know, around, you know, shopping lists. That's a really fantastic use case. You can set up shopping lists and then someone can go shopping for you.
Cool.
So in the pandemic, that was a really good use case. And then we discovered that in a similar way to get apps on smartphones, you get apps for voice assistants. And that really got our brains thinking about what else might we be able to do. And it kind of all stemmed from this idea of, in the telecare world, they have these kind of check-in systems, but these check-in systems are binary. So it's like, yes, I'm okay today, or no, I'm not okay today. Or the person might not choose either of those two options, which would raise the alarm and that, you know, potentially there's an issue that needs to be investigated. So with that binary system, what I was thinking was, well, that doesn't give you any context. If you were having to respond to that, you could be going to that person's house without really knowing, you know, have they been, has there been, oh, I am so sorry.
Don't worry.
I think that's a notification of my Alexa. I think it's fine.
She's listening.
So as a responder, it's actually very difficult to know what the underlying issues might be, and has something happened all of a sudden, or actually has there been something that's been growing over time, but the person's not felt they wanted to bother anyone by pushing the I'm not okay button. So the concept that we came up with originally was this idea of a check-in, but it was a check-in that built more context around someone's sleep and their nutrition and their social connections. You know, are they feeling lonely? And that then grew into what's become our voice application, which is called Kind Space. So Kind Space does the daily check-in with you every day. And then it also has a tips library that signposts you to lots of different areas of support and guidance around those kinds of well-being areas.
Wow.
Yeah, so it kind of grew from what we were doing, and then we launched it officially in the November of that year, 2020. So before the year was out, we had launched an app in the Amazon store, which was just phenomenal, that journey. But we got so much support as well. It was just wonderful. We ended up finalists in a competition called the Ability Net Tech for Good Awards.
Wow.
Definitely encourage people to check out. They run it every year, and there's always so many inspirational projects and really unique ideas. So they kind of helped us with a crowdfunding campaign, and then we used the funds from that to support the launch. It was an amazing journey and amazing to look back on.
I bet. And I suppose also, I mean, I remember I was worked all the way through lockdown in a content role, and there was this real sense and ongoing discussion around this idea of content fatigue. Everyone was trying to sort of do good by sharing information, but it was largely written and video content, and there weren't many people doing audio other than podcast type things, but not audio in the intimate way that you were using audio to connect with people. I think that's incredible.
Yeah, and I think Kindspace for me, it's our way of curating content that people maybe otherwise wouldn't be able to access. Yeah. So we think it's really easy, you know, to read a newspaper or go online and listen to a podcast and these sorts of things, but actually for a lot of people, you know, the voice assistants, they open up so much more potential for them to be able to listen to the newspapers. There's a fantastic Alexa skill called Talking Newspapers, and we recommend that to all of our customers because it allows them to listen to the local news, and it's read by someone in their local area. You know, it's volunteer led. It's a fantastic example of how the voice technology can be used. And curating that content and making it accessible for us has been such an important part of what we do.
Yeah. It's amazing. It reminds me, I remember seeing about, there's an organisation that links up blind people with volunteers around the world who can volunteer to be FaceTime at any point to help with just menial tasks. Like, can you just read out what you can see on this medicine bottle? Is it what I think it is? And it's amazing.
Be my eye.
Yeah, that's the one, yeah.
It's beautiful, yeah. Yeah, very useful.
Now, back in 2020, which feels bananas, I feel like time has passed differently because of the pandemic. It feels like that was a heartbeat ago. But back in 2020, when you were talking to Thomas and Jess around people's attitudes to the smart tech industry and the stumbling blocks, a big conversation that you guys were having was around price point and this perception of it being a sort of luxury. But actually during lockdowns, what we found was the internet and connectivity and smart devices were almost a sort of essential workers in their own right. I know that I can't personally have imagined going through it all without the ability to video call my mum and an old lady that I go and visit around the corner, being able to sort of drop in with her and stuff. And it feels like people's attitudes towards smart tech changed and have changed for the good because of the pandemic. It's one of the sort of good things that have come out of it. Do you agree?
Yeah, it's definitely accelerated the adoption of these sorts of technologies and even just helping people to get online, I think. So in Scotland, there was a great initiative called Connecting Scotland to help people to get online. So I think their target was within that first year of the pandemic to get something like 40,000 people connected and provide them with devices like iPads to be able to do video calls and these sorts of things. So yeah. So that was kind of one area that I think was hugely, hugely important. And I think, you know, people started to recognise that these sorts of technologies, like you say, that they're not actually a luxury because they do really help us to have independence. And for a lot of people, they help with productivity and allowing us to feel more secure in our spaces as well. And there's the entertaining side of things. We spent a lot of time at home. So having things to entertain us became more important, I think, in that home space.
Yeah.
It's interesting, actually, that I was looking at the latest Ofcom report, and they look at different regions. Unfortunately, I only know the stats for Scotland. But from their latest report in December, 43% of people in Scotland now own a smart speaker.
Wow.
And I can't believe it got as high as that. Because back in the pandemic days or pre-pandemic days, it was probably only like 20%. So there's been a big jump in ownership. And of the people that have a smart speaker, a staggering 87% of those people own the Alexa devices and only 9% are Google owners.
Wow.
So yeah, some amazing statistics when it comes to uptake. Some of our more recent research that we've carried out ourselves, you know, again, is showing that adoption curve. However, when it comes to the voice assistants, there's still a very low level of understanding about the true potential of them and how much they can actually do. We did some research very recently for the Kindspace application, looking at how it might benefit people with feelings of worry and anxiety.
Cool.
And when we asked people about what they were using their smart speakers for and whether they had ever used an app before, it was really eye-opening. You know, people were like, oh, I've only ever used it for music or setting timers and alarms. Hardly anyone was using them to, you know, control lights and do different functions around the home in terms of optimization. So yeah, it's interesting that we are getting to a point where people are starting to adopt these technologies, but they're probably not getting the best out of them yet.
Yeah. And I suppose a lot of the people that you are especially working to support are, as you said, the more vulnerable members of society. And with that vulnerability often comes a nervousness around new technology or doing it right or even being hacked or, you know, not knowing the potential risks sometimes just are enough for people to go, I'm not prepared to get involved with it, full stop. What sort of reassurance do you give to your more vulnerable or not vulnerable, just cautious people that you're interacting with around that nervousness and around their smart devices?
That's a great question. And it's probably the top thing that people ask us about. And it's actually one of the top things that on our website, we have a knowledge base and lots of guides to help people. And that's, you know, one of the top things that people are looking at is around the privacy side of things and cybersecurity and these sorts of things. When we were running our Facebook tutorial sessions, we dedicated 1 week specifically to those areas.
Really?
and created some resources to give people just some basic things, like, you know, make sure, you know, if there's a password, change it from whatever the original password was, and some advice around how to set up your network if you want to make it more secure. And then on the voice assistant side of things, I think there's probably things that will need to change on the Amazon side of things. So what I kind of explain to people is that out of the box, your Alexa device has default settings that potentially you might not actually agree with. So it's a little bit different from, you know, with like GDPR, they have that opt-in sort of approach. You know, the whole ethos with GDPR is that, you know, people, they have to actively, consciously make that decision to opt in. Whereas with the Amazon stuff, the default settings are unfortunately the other way around. And you as a user need to go into your settings and just check, you know, what are you comfortable with in terms of how they're using your data. So, but what I do say to people is that it's not necessarily a bad thing, but you would want to be in a position where you're informed so that you know what data is being shared and how that data is being used, because I think that's only fair. So our guides and the kind of resources we've created just help to explain that, and also explain that there are benefits. So again, kind of going back to the Scottish angle, unfortunately, Alexa's not great at understanding the Scottish accent. And even in our latest research that we have done, love the feedback that we got from the cohort was things like, I've got a really strong Fife accent, and I have to put my posh English voice for the device to be able to hear it. So what we explain to people actually is that by sharing your data and allowing Amazon to use that, then they can better train the models to be able to understand and do the recognition more accurately.
Well,
so it's not necessarily a bad thing, but we know that people, they want to make those decisions for themselves and feel comfortable about what data that they're sharing.
Yeah. I'm not sure that my, I won't say her name because she's listening, but my device is particularly interested in the hundreds of recordings of my toddler trying to get her to play the Frozen soundtrack. I'm not sure what insight that would provide anyone of interest. But if they ever ask for it, how many times a day can a toddler ask to play, "Do you want to build a snowman?" We've got it on. We've got it to hand should they need it. Now, speaking of sharing your voice, you personally have recently, well, I mean, you do an incredible kind of tour of public speaking internationally as well as within the UK. Around this idea of voice in smart devices. Tell me a bit more about it, because I think it's incredible.
Yeah, so we've had some really lovely opportunities recently. So I was in Edinburgh a couple of weeks ago for the European Chatbot and Conversational AI Summit. And that was a wonderful opportunity. It's the first time I've done anything that big before and in front of an audience of experts when it comes to the conversational AI side of things. But it was lovely to be able to share some of the projects that we've been working on and also showcase some of the things in Scotland and again talk about some of the nuances when it comes to user adoption in this country in terms of things like a voice recognition for people with Scottish accents. So it was lovely to be able to do that and to share that. We've been doing a bit of a tour around Scotland as well. So we had the opportunity to do some work with the NHS in the Western Isles. So we went over to Stornoway and did like a digital health fair there. And we're hoping to do some other similar events across Scotland this year. And then the most exciting thing that we have coming up is I am off to Tennessee in literally like 3 weeks time.
Wow.
To a conference called Project Voice, and we'll be pitching over there and sharing what we've been doing with our Kindspace voice application. And I have also been invited to, they are doing a special session the day before the conference starts for women in voice specifically, so it's like a celebratory event, which is a kind of exclusive invite only thing. So I'm so excited to be able to meet experts and learn more about what's happening in the US as well, because it tends to be that in the smart home world and the voice technology world, they're like 12 months at least ahead of us. So, you know, when new features and new technologies roll out, we'll get good early sight of that by being over there this year.
Amazing. Do you think you would be as involved in voice technology had it not been for the pandemic?
No, gosh, it's quite surreal, actually.
Isn't it incredible? The good thing, like the good that, not to take away from how much bad, but so much good has come out of it as well.
Yeah, and even, you know, working in a field that's more audio and music related, like I did actually really love music when I was younger and at school. I guess part of me back then was like, oh, as a musician, we like, I might not be able to earn a, you know, a steady living from that, and so that could just be a hobby. And now I've actually been able to move into a field where it blends, you know, the engineering and technology side that I love with the creative music side as well. So yeah, it's quite surreal, I think.
That's amazing. And I suppose as well, going back to your comment around accents being difficult to understand, and I was thinking when you said, I was thinking a Tennessee accent is surely not one of the easy ones to understand either. But accent aside, there are other reasons that someone's voice might not be clearly understood, such as people that have experienced a stroke or have mobility issues, or for whatever, it might be medical reasons or mental reasons as well, that someone doesn't feel comfortable talking. I suppose it's like that broader influence that you guys have about the insight that you're able to provide around the data and encouraging people to share something that actually could have medical benefits. I mean, beyond the medical and mental, physical benefits you're already exploring, but to different groups of people that might not necessarily have considered smart devices as means to accessing the world around them in a bigger way.
Yeah, that's a really good point. So people with non-standard speech, I actually sit as a trustee on a charity for adults with learning disabilities, and I think technology solutions that allow people to communicate are so powerful and so meaningful. So I think it's, you know, lovely to think that we live in a world now where these are very real possibilities. So the other thing that's quite interesting is that I think people maybe have a perception of voice assistants being voice only and audio only. But I mentioned before about, you know, the devices with the screens.
Yeah.
So the devices with the screens have really powerful accessibility settings. So you can have the device display and text everything that Alexa says. There's a really nice feature called Tap to Alexa that allows you to create your own shortcuts. So rather than you having to say out the command in words, then you can just do the Tap to Alexa.
Wow.
Initiate the thing that you wanted it to do. And then the last thing I was going to talk about was, in the startup world, there are some really amazing companies that are developing unique solutions just for people with non-standard speech. So one which I will name check is called VoiceIt. They actually have an Alexa integration as well. So that allows you to, it's like a translation tool basically. So if you are someone with non-standard speech, you can train the tool to translate what you're saying to then allow you to communicate with others that maybe aren't familiar with how you pronounce things or how you say things. And so I love that tech. I think it's a really, really good, good development, and accessibility should absolutely be at the heart of everything we do.
Yeah, I suppose it won't be too long till the next iteration of that is being able to translate things like British Sign Language or Makaton for non-verbal communication in that regard into this whole world of development.
Yeah, and I think there's already some really good research and development into these sorts of things. So with the graphical recognition, so with the camera and artificial intelligence being able to translate I'm sure I saw online there was another technology that uses gloves, so it can then pick up the changes in movement in a person's hands to then translate what's being said. So yeah, technology has such a wonderful way of helping us to connect with each other.
Well, that leads me very nicely, thank you for that perfect segue, into my last final question. It's a personal obsession of mine. People close to me must be sick of hearing me say this because I bang on about it all the time, but the idea of connectivity, connectedness, connection, whatever you want the noun to be, but the idea of if there's a reason that we exist, it is to forge connections. What do you see as the role of smart technology in this idea of connectivity?
This is, for me, quite a deep question, actually, especially with everything that has happened over the last 3 years. I think, like I was saying before, our homes have become so much more important to us in those spaces.
Yeah.
And smart home technology, that adoption, as we were saying, has really accelerated. And I think people are starting to appreciate how much it can help us to free up time. So we've got our Roomba vacuums, we can automate our shopping, you know, we've got fridges that tell us when we're out of milk. There's so many amazing things that help us to free up time and just allow us to focus then on the things that are important, which is spending time with our friends and families and connecting and using the technology as well as a means to connect. So, you know, leaving people little notes on the Alexa, I think that's so fun and so much nicer, I think, sometimes, you know, to know if someone's thinking of you, if they've left you a note. Not maybe so much fun if they leave you a note and it's more along the lines of put the bins out.
Very useful though.
Yeah, I think with a smart home and the way that it's going, it's creating a world where the computers or the digital part is integrating into the home, so that we in the future we'll probably not see it as computers and technology and using our voice and this whole ambient computing and doing things more with gestures and the house actually intuitively knowing what we need. I think it's just going to help so much for how we age and how we live.
Yeah. I love the idea that the more advanced we become, the more we tap into the most timeless quality of what it is to be human, which is to find a connection with each other.
Definitely, definitely.
Well, Caroline, thank you so much. It has been such a pleasure talking to you.
Oh, thank you. It's been wonderful.
Okay, thank you so much.
That's it for another episode. Thank you so much for listening to The Smart Life. If you like what you heard, don't forget to rate and subscribe. Plus, you can catch all our past episodes wherever you get your podcasts. Here at Beacon, we specialise in finding innovative, people-centric ways to bring the world of the smart home to life. Got a story you need help telling? Get in touch with us today. Visit www.beaconagency.co.uk.